Chapter 12, Starving. Not many days after they celebrated their first Thanksgiving, a ship came from England with 35 new colonists, the first aid to reach them. But alas, these men and women brought with them no food to keep them until the next harvest, no clothes except those they wore, and had not even tools with which to work in the fields or to cut wood. Shortly after they came, the governor called a council. When it met, Mr. Bradford spoke. "A greater problem is now before us than the one we thought we had solved. We felt ourselves fortunate that the harvest of this year had taken care of our needs. Now we find the mouths to be fed are nearly two-thirds as many more than before. And the food which would have kept us in comfort until next year's harvest will now do little more than last us into the fair weather of next summer." "It was a shame," cried Winslow, "to send these people without anything they needed to help them." "Do the merchants think this country a garden where food grows without work? Do they think these new men can plant without tools or seed, or cut lumber without axes, or live without food? Where is it to come from? I have the best will in the world to feed them, but with what shall I do it?" "We shall share our crusts with our brethren," said Bradford gravely. "But," replied Allerton, "can we share with them crusts we do not possess? Will there be anything to eat?" "Somehow we shall keep alive," replied Bradford. "We must eat less bread and more of other things." And after argument, so it was decided. They should make the corn go as far as they could, and they should then get along with such other things as could be had. They did not always grind the corn into meal and then make bread from it. Sometimes they parched it in a pan over a fire, something like popcorn that did not pop, and ate it as it was. Long before summer, the corn was entirely gone. The children went out into the woods and picked strawberries, and as the summer passed, they picked huckleberries. But on many tables there was nothing to eat but clams or oysters and water to drink. You must remember that they had no cows, and therefore no milk. Some goats they had, and they may have had goat's milk, but they do not mention it. So far as we know, though they had hens and chickens, they did not get many eggs. They became so weak from lack of food that, although none of them died, men were seen staggering around the streets at noon, absolutely exhausted. They lived, but they had no strength. Many have wondered why they did not do more hunting and fishing. They do not seem to have known how. In England and Holland, they had neither hunted nor fished, and they brought with them nets intended for small fish, but too weak for the great cod and mackerel which were found in the bay. The hooks they brought were too large even for the cod, and many have wondered what sort of fish they thought they were going to catch. It is not difficult nowadays to kill game and rabbits with a shotgun, but the guns of that day were very inaccurate. While some of the pilgrims were able to shoot birds and game, none of them could hit a moving animal with any certainty. For some reason or other, the pilgrims did not use much game or eat much fish even at this time. They preferred bread. Bradford conducted now several expeditions to buy corn from the Indians, and so tided the colony along from week to week. He urged the Indians to plant more corn, and promised to buy it as soon as it was ripe. The Indians had never seen glass beads, although they had themselves made beads of shells. The new glass beads were much prettier and better, and the Indians much preferred them and called them wampum. Strings of these beads, or the beads unstrung, brought a high price from the Indians in corn or skins. Before the white men came, too, the Indians had no iron kettles or hatchets, and it was a great effort to cut down a tree with a stone tomahawk and easy work with an iron hatchet. It was also very hard for the Indian to do much cooking by dropping heated stones into a pot, and it was easy to cook soup or stew in an iron kettle. So that the Indians were very glad to get these new things, and were anxious to give all the corn and skins they could get for them. The difficulty the pilgrims had in getting more corn for food was that the Indians themselves did not have it. During this spring and summer there came two bodies of men to them, one small and one large, both from their friends in England, despite the fact that they did not themselves have enough food, and that these men were disorderly and otherwise objectionable, they took them in and very generously shared with them what they had. "They are far from any help," said Bradford, "and have nothing. They are men, and shall we treat them like wolves and drive them into the woods to starve?" But they did not treat the pilgrims as finely as the pilgrims treated them. They broke down the young corn upon which the pilgrims were depending if another winter like the last was to be avoided. They demanded better food than the pilgrims themselves had, and threatened violence when they did not get it. Many wished to turn them out since the good weather had come, but Bradford refused. "They are entrusted to us by our friends," he said, "and we must keep the trust, even though they prove faithless." By this time the clothes of the pilgrims were worn to rags, and their shoes were either full of holes or had gone to pieces entirely. They did not bring with them new clothes, and the one ship which came after the Mayflower brought no supply for them. They now looked so ragged and forlorn that everyone who saw them pitied them. They made clothing of skins, which they tanned and made soft, as Squanto and other Indians showed them how to do. They made moccasins or slippers out of skins. After the second year, they must have presented a very queer appearance, dressed partly in skins and partly in ragged European clothes. The harvest in the second year was good, but not good enough to feed as many extra mouths as they had guests during the year, and to keep themselves in plenty. In the third year they were again in great want, and saw that long before the new harvest bread would be entirely gone. Governor Bradford summoned a council of important men and told them how serious the situation was. "We came over here," he said, "in debt to the merchants who loaned us the money for our tools and expenses. We agreed to work and live in common for 7 years so that we might pay that debt. What has been the result? The lazy do not work because they know that their food depends upon the common store, and that we shall not be cruel enough to deprive them of their food because they do not work. The diligent, therefore, must work hard enough to provide for the lazy as well as for themselves. Besides, the women and children grumble at working in the fields, and the fathers have felt, quite naturally, that they did not wish their wives and children to work in order to support the slackers. The trouble," said Winslow, "lies with the system itself. With the common stock, the agreement to put all of what we raise and own into one store from which everyone shall be supplied and fed." "I agree with you," said Bradford. And I, came from various voices around him. "There is a solution," declared Bradford, "and only one. We must stop working the land together. Each man shall have as many acres as it seems possible he can plant and tend. He shall then have whatever he can raise on it for himself and his family, and no one else shall be fed from it. The lazy will also be given fields, and they will understand that if they do not work, they will not eat." "Yes," said Mr. Allerton, "I'm sure that will please many. The women and children will then be able to work on their own fields. We shall not only find that those who are now lazy will work when they are afraid that they will otherwise have no food, but we shall also get work from many people who now do not do any for other and better reasons." So the land was divided, each family getting a large piece, and each single man getting as much as he could till, and they all worked very much harder than they ever had before, and saw clearly that this was a good solution. The moment they devoted all of their attention to raising food, they saw that they would raise enough. Two new ships presently came from England, bearing 97 new people. They found the colony now in good courage and good spirits, anxious to work and fight. The old colonists were afraid that the newcomers would now eat all of the new harvest as the newcomers had before. The newcomers, who had this time brought their own food, were afraid they would have to share with the colonists. To them, the latter looked so ragged and miserable that they were afraid they would all starve. So the old planters agreed to keep what they were raising, and the newcomers were to eat what they brought, and all were pleased. Soon after this, other ships came and brought cattle, and within a year or two, all of the real difficulties of the colony had been solved. Some of these new people who came in these ships you must remember. Mrs. Alice Southward landed at this time, and soon after married Governor Bradford. Captain Standish's wife, Rose, who was a very fine woman, had died in the first year, and on one of these ships came a woman named Barbara, who became the second Mrs. Standish. Her last name we do not know. Edward Winslow married a lady who came in the Mayflower, and whose first husband had died in the first year. She was a Mrs. White, the mother of the first English child known to have been born in America, Peregrine White. John Winslow, the brother of Edward, married Mary Chilton. Priscilla and John Alden had been married for a year or two, and in the end lived much longer than all these other people.